Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the June 15th meeting of the Herring River Executive Council. My name is Carol Ridley, Project Coordinator for the Herring River Restoration Council, Herring River Restoration Project. And I would invite members of the council to introduce themselves. Do you want to start, Debbie? Oops, you're on mute. Sorry.
Now I'm unmuted. Okay. Debbie Freeman, representative from the town of Wellfleet. I served on the Herring River, on Friends of Herring River, as a member of the Board of Trustees for some 9 years, and I chaired the Conservation Commission in Wellfleet. I'm now on the Board of Health in Wellfleet.
Great. Thanks, Debbie. Jeff.
Jeff Sanders, Chief of Natural Resource Management and Science at Cape Cod National Seashore.
Thank you. And Helen?
Helen Miranda Wilson, formerly on the Select Board, the ZBA, the Planning Board, the Housing Authority, Shellfish Advisory Committee. I'm applying to be on that again, and I'm on this. Thank you.
Thanks, Helen.
Ryan? I've been other things. I've been a Water Commissioner, and I was on the Water Issues Advisory Committee. I can't remember it all. Okay. Doesn't mean I'm good at anything. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Helen. Brian?
And distinguished on all counts, Helen. Yes. Brian Carlstrom, Superintendent, Cape Cod National Seashore, starting my sixth summer. Prior to this assignment, I was Deputy Associate Director for Natural Resource Stewardship and Science for the National Park Service. Thanks, Carol.
Excellent. Thank you. And welcome, everyone. So I'm just going to move to our slides here. Hopefully you can all see that. Just a quick overview of our agenda. So we've already covered welcome and introductions. We'll touch on our minutes of March 16th, which was the last council meeting. We have some project updates we'd like to provide this afternoon. An update from the Herring River Stakeholder Group, and I see that several members of the stakeholder group are present, which is good to see. Any member announcements, public comment, and then adjournment. So with that, I don't have a slide for the minutes, but I guess the minutes are the next order of business. If we do have, so I do want to note something about the minutes, which you may have picked up on. But the date at the top of the minutes says December 2022. That's wrong. It's March 16th, 2023. So that is one correction that's needed at the very top of the minutes. But any other comments or corrections on the minutes? And if not, if there's a consensus to approve the minutes with that change, yes?
Yes.
Jeff? Okay, Helen, yes. I see Debbie's nodding, yes. And Brian, yes. Okay, super. So we're all set with that one change on the minutes. Terrific. So we'll move right into our project updates. And I'm really delighted this afternoon to welcome Wes Stinson from Environmental Partners, which is the firm selected by the town of Wellfleet to serve as owner's project representative. They are working with the town to oversee construction at the Chequesset Bridge site. And Wes is going to give us all an update on construction progress. Welcome, Wes.
Thank you. Nice to see you all. I know I've met a lot of you, and it's nice to kind of meet with this group. Quite a project and quite a long road to get to where we are. And I'm happy to report that construction is ongoing. We've started in earnest early March, as I'm sure many of you have seen and been aware of. And I believe most of this group is receiving in some fashion my weekly reports that essentially are gonna, you know, they're probably actually more in depth than what I will give you right now. But if you've been following along through those, then you already know a lot of what I'll be telling you. So early March, we established a staging area off Dark Harbor Road. MIG Construction out of Acton, Mass. Was the contractor that won the bid. They've been a pleasure to work with. Approximately a crew of six people are there regularly. We began by establishing site access, you know, being an active road on the dike. That's been a, you know, one of those logistical hurdles. You have to be able to access the work. So they've been slowly moving from north to south along the upstream side of the dike, driving sheeting, 25 feet and 35 feet long steel sheeting into the ground, backfilling with a class B 3-inch minus gravel as they make their way out there. Essentially, that access has been everything right now is in an effort to establish and build the temporary bridge, which we're hoping and everything points to having that done sometime this fall. So as we've been working along building site access, we've also been building the northern and southern temporary bridge abutments. These are the kind of, you know, little shapes that you see protruding from the sheeting. Involved with that is a lot of tie rods being installed. There's deadman sheeting, which go within the abutments themselves to get tied back. And then they bring that up with gravel, compact it. And that is where the, you know, essentially, eventually they'll pour a concrete abutment right there and the temporary bridge will be installed. As they've been building their way out, they've also crossed the culvert, safely establishing crane access across that culvert. And they've been installing a stone armor. This is a scour protection measure that is for the permanent bridge, but it is kind of in the order of operations. It goes in now because it's going to be laid underneath the temporary bridge. So as we've gone over the culvert, we've excavated roughly 5 feet below the bottom of the river there to roughly an elevation of negative 10 and replaced that excavation with like 12 inch to 36 inch, you know, size stone. We currently have half of that installed right now. The second half is pending installation of some piles. So the temporary bridge will be carried by three piers made up of 24 inch wide piles that will be driven. You'll probably start to see some of that happen, if not next week, shortly thereafter. Once there's going to be a group of piles that go right into that coffer cell where that stone armor is. So we need to get those piles driven first before we install that second half of the stone armor scour protection. The piles themselves, like I was saying, is 24 inch wide. They'll be driven down to, I have to check the elevations, but I believe negative 50. There is a test pile that will be driven first. That's going to go right off the upstream side of the dike within that stone armor coffer cell. That's going to be a test pile that is used to analyze the loading capabilities and what they're going to need for the permanent bridge. So that will go in. You'll see some apparatus at work is H-beams and steel that is essentially erected as a work platform. So, you know, a lot of the steel that you see go in the ground has some structural, you know, bearing, some access capabilities. A lot of it's just for, you know, site access, essentially for the crew to go out there and work over the river. So we've going here thinking where we've been. So yeah, so we've got the stone armor going in right now. That backfill operations are happening. And before they start driving those piles, they will be bringing on site a larger crane. The crane that you've seen on site is the, you know, the smaller of the two. Over the next week or 2 weeks, we'll start to see a lot of material start to come in and they'll erect that crane, which will have a stick of approximately 150 to 180 feet. They're still kind of up in the air as to how long they're going to need the arm of that crane. In terms of site access and kind of the community outreach, we've been working closely with the town, trying to field any concerns from the residents. I know traffic's an issue, and a lot of the people park on the bridge to go fishing. We've tried to keep the crew themselves from parking on the bridge. We've tried to ensure that, you know, the site is secure and safe in all manners possible. Last week, they took out a row of guardrail, and they've replaced it with jersey barriers as they start to build that southern temporary bridge abutment. And right now, the kind of pending construction items that we have on the plate that are out there are the final submittals for these temporary bridges, which need to go to the Mass Department of Transportation, MassDOT. As soon as we get those back and we're given the blessing from them, we will, you know, carry on with the pile and pier installation within the upstream side of the river. Another item that is kind of on the near-term radar in terms of construction is we will have utilities being moved. Once that new temporary bridge is established, all the utilities that are currently traveling over the existing dike will have to be shifted over to the temporary bridge, which is in itself a feat. If any of you have ever worked with utility companies, it's a process and you just have to be patient and work with them. But I think we're, you know, hopefully we're out ahead of it. Right now, the question is whether or not we span that utility from Pier 1 to 3, which is roughly a span of about 200 feet. But attaching utility poles to those piles are kind of has its engineering complications as well. The other alternative would be to install utility poles on either abutment and have a utility span of about 350 feet across the river. So those are kind of the submittals, and the utilities are on my radar as kind of our big hurdles to get over. Not that they're insurmountable, but we're persevering. And yeah, in a nutshell, that's where we're at. That's where we're heading, taking us into the fall and through the summer. And I'm happy to answer any questions if anybody has any. I'm sure I've missed something, but please feel free to give me any questions if you got them.
Les, thank you for that very thorough update. Let me ask the council members, do you have any questions for Wes?
Yeah, I've got one. Wes, in terms of the construction access area on the north or the west end that was within the seashore, is that the full extent of the area they're going to need to use, what we see right now?
So you're talking at the Duck Harbor Road?
Yeah.
Yeah, so as far as right now, MIG has insinuated that that's all the area that they'll need. They had a larger area outlined as a potential staging area, which they didn't feel the need to utilize all, which was fine by our, you know, less need to clear. I hope that remains the case. I don't see that changing. There's been no indication that it would. And just because they didn't take advantage of it doesn't mean, I guess, you know, if they did want to, I'm sure that they would have a right to.
Right. Just,
but as of right now, I think we're good.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful.
Yep.
Hey Wes, are you seeing a lot of foot traffic around the staging area which is at the very end of Duck Harbor Road? I did ask because the parks received some questions about it, about accessing in that area or not. I'm just wondering if you know if MIG is seeing a lot of foot traffic in that area.
Definitely over the last 2 weeks. In the last week, it actually is, you know, traffic has picked up, both vehicular and foot traffic. Yeah, it's on. Just driving around, I think this past week is like turned on all of a sudden. So yeah, there is more traffic. I don't know. I haven't heard that it's been a nuisance or a concern to MIG yet. If we do want to have them kind of enhance their fencing or whatever, you know, we can definitely push for that. And if you're hearing anything of that kind, you know, of that that type of concern, we're happy to respond to it.
I haven't heard any concerns. I've just had, there's been a number, well, not an, a few inquiries about whether people can still access Duck Harbor Road there and things like that. And I was just wondering if that has raised any issues for me.
Yeah, no, it hasn't. We did, so when we first got started, a lot of the crews were parking on the dike itself. We did get some feedback from the community that maybe they'd prefer if they didn't park there, just from a safety standpoint. So I asked MIG if they would, you know, park closer to Duck Harbor Road or up by the Great Island parking area, and they were happy to do so. And I know in talking with, in one of our meetings, I think Tim Smith had mentioned maybe even parking down Duck Harbor Road. They haven't, you know, really blocked it off completely. I know technically, I think the road is closed on account of the work that was happening there this spring. But, you know, finger on the pulse. And I think if we hear anything, okay, you know, we'll respond. Helen, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, it's a question from the general audience, but I want to know the answer to it too. When the utilities are moved, will the electrical service be interrupted? And if so, any idea how long? Although, you know, who knows?
Yeah, at some point there will be a moment when it could be. I'll have to, it's a good question. If it is interrupted, it will not be for a long period of time. It would not be, you know, I would have to imagine it would definitely be within the span of a workday and probably even smaller to an hour or so. And when I get more information as to what their final approach is going to be on the utilities, they may even be able to, you know, splice it all together. But there will be, I anticipate, some momentary, you know,
disruption. And of course, anybody that might be affected by that would be notified beforehand, right?
100%. Yep.
That's another little list of special addresses. Thank mm-hmm. you.
No, I'll make a note of that, actually. That's a good point.
Terrific. And I do want to note that Janet Reinhardt has joined us. So thank you, Janet. Good to see you. Any other comments or questions for Wes?
Yeah, Wes, this is Jeff again. I know this has come up and I think I might have just missed it, but just the timeline for the temporary bridge, when that's going to be complete, do you know, is there an estimate?
It's complete or how long it's going to be up for?
When the temporary bridge is going to be completed.
Complete. So yeah, right now, the caveat that in construction things can change, we're shooting for late October.
Okay.
I think that's the on their schedule right now.
Barry, you have a question?
Yes, Wes, just one thing. I represent the Jaquessa Club here on Jaquessa Neck Road. I did make note to the town administrator, the speed of the trucks as they're passing down Jaquessa Neck Road. So if we could just, they should obviously know what the speed limit is, and with the additional traffic on the road with walkers, bikers, and even activity around the club here, we just caution that they be mindful of the speed.
100%. Yeah. So Rich had reached out to me a few days ago, and I spoke with the crew yesterday morning, and they were, you know, made aware. But please don't hesitate. You know, if you see anything, you know, I know it's I believe it's a 25-mile-an-hour zone through there. So any feedback's appreciated.
And there is, Wes, there is an email address, correct, where anyone with a comment or question or concern can always email, and it will get responded to herringriver@enbpartners.com?
Yeah, correct. Yep.
Okay, great. All right. Excellent. Well, yeah. Wes, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're very welcome, and I appreciate you guys having me here.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Wes.
So that is certainly a lot of major activity that's happening with respect to the project right now. But just to take a look at some of the other aspects of the project, because as you know, this element of the restoration project is under construction. We're continuing to make progress on other elements of the project that some of which soon will be under construction. So final design work continues. In fact, I believe it is complete. And Jeff and Ryan perhaps can speak to this for the Mill Creek water control structure. I'd invite either one of you to maybe give us a quick update on that.
Yeah, please go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, thanks, Brian. The final design documents are complete. I had a brief chat with our project manager this morning about a few things, and it does sound like they're planning to go out to bid for that project very, very shortly. That's exciting. So yes, yeah, so we'll hopefully be getting some. I don't know the timing of how long it's going to be out for bid. I have a follow-up meeting with him later, but yeah, so that's all completed, and we should be going out for bid to the copper contract soon.
Excellent. That's very exciting. Great. Work is continuing on the final design plans for the low roads and culverts, so the low road elevations, Old County, Bound Brook Island, Poldike Road. There are some modifications to the culvert designs that have been included in the plans to increase the scour protection. And also some fairly minor road profile changes that are intended to just improve drainage over time. So those are being factored into the plans. Same with high toss road causeway removal and road elevation, and also the property impact prevention at the club, as well as properties on Way 672 and Battenbrook Island Road. So those are all in different stages of completion of final design. And once those final design packages are complete, those elements become ready to go out to bid. So that work is on the way as well. So I'll just pause there to see if there's any questions about those elements. Okay, then I will move on to more good news on the fundraising front. So in addition to the NRCS, U.S. Department of Agriculture and Natural Resource Conservation Service grant that the town received last year for $27.2 million and for $22.67 million from the Massachusetts Division of Ecological Restoration, the town has very recently been awarded a grant from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Transformational Habitat Restoration Grant Program to the tune of $14.69 million, almost $15 million. So that last grant piece fulfilled all of the funding that's needed for construction of elements that are needed on town property. So we're having, you know, we just heard good news on the Mill Creek structure front, which is actually happening on the parks property, but all of the infrastructure, including any property mitigation that's needed under phase one, is now fully funded with this NOAA grant. The bulk of the money from the NOAA grant is going to be used for the low road elevation and culvert replacements. That is the major cost component there. There's also a bit of funding for the bridge project. There's also funding in that grant for project management. So that funds the services of environmental partners, Wes and his team, as well as the design engineer. And if you were watching the select board meeting recently, there was a contract approved between the town and Fussin O'Neill, and Fussin O'Neill will be serving as the design services contractor for the town during construction of the bridge. They are the engineer of record for the bridge, so they will continue as the design engineer during the construction process. And all of these positions are funded through grants. And in addition, within the NOAA grant, there are funds for what are considered indirect expenses, which are things like the administration of the grants and contracting with an accounting firm to assist with some of the tracking that's required and some of the reporting that's required. So great news on the funding front. The select board is going to be asked at their upcoming meeting on the 20th to officially vote to authorize acceptance of that grant this coming day. So that is good news. And then, of course, we have work underway that is funded in part by the National Park Foundation and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service North Atlantic Wetlands Conservation Act, or NACA, which is funding a vegetation clearing, which you saw happening at Duck Harbor and will continue next fall at Duck Harbor, and also a spoil berm pilot project, which we'll touch on in a minute. And I just want to stress, because it is a question that folks ask, and with all of these major millions of dollars of grants coming in to be used for multiple different projects, it's quite an undertaking to track that and to make sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed in terms of the reporting that's required by each of these funding agencies. And I do want to stress that each of these funding agencies has very rigorous requirements for tracking and reporting and how each, you know, requisition is submitted for payment and reimbursement. So the town has contracted with Clifton Larson Allen, which is an accounting firm with expertise in municipal finance, to help structure this process of tracking and accounting of the grants. So that is underway. They are working very closely with Environmental Partners, which serves as the owner's project representative and is part of the, you know, chain of reviewing different invoicing that happens as a in the course of the project, along with our technical team, and which includes representatives from each of the grant agencies. So we have a very tight team working closely to structure this process of tracking and accounting and administer it. So it's a very, you know, sort of well-organized, well-thought-out process, seems to be moving smoothly so far. And in addition to, you know, handling all of the, you know, kind of monthly and quarterly tracking of the money coming in and out, also we'll be keeping an eye on all of the required reporting, which is usually on a semi-annual basis for each of our each of the funding sources, each of the agencies. They're on a somewhat different schedules, but usually on a twice a year basis. So any questions on fundraising or grants management? Helen? Oops, I think you're on mute.
There, sorry. I think the answer to this is no, but I suddenly realized. So there is no, all the choice of all these different, when you receive a grant and then it gets used for one of the many tasks involved with this. So there doesn't have to be any procurement process, right? You don't have to, do bids get submitted? It's amazing I don't know this, but I don't.
So for the contractors, for example, MIG, you know, Wes spoke about MIG, that they were selected through a competitive bid process. So a bid package goes out and they were selected, you know, they have to meet certain requirements and they were the low bidder that was a qualified bidder. So that will be true for all of the construction elements. And I will also say that for each of these grants, each of them is very specific. I mean, each amount is specified to a particular project element or activity. So these aren't just sort of grand sums that, you know, can be used for any purpose. Each grant indicates within the total how much is allocated to a specific construction activity, design services for a particular project, project management, et cetera. So it's pretty well spelled out.
So that's like appropriations for town meeting. You can't go buying a fire truck with what has been apportioned, you know, voted on for a police cruiser. Okay, thank you.
You know, most of the funders do have a process for making some changes in those budgets if that's needed. But it's, you know, it's not like sort of just a phone call and say, hey, we want to shift this over to this category. Usually it's a little more involved and they may say no, but there usually is a little bit of flexibility built in, but there's a process to go through. But you're right, Helen, it's an established sort of use of funds, eligible use of funds. Okay. All right, if no further comments or questions, just vegetation clearing. And I see Tim here. Tim, not to put you on the spot, but rather than me recite this, I don't know if there are any updates that you would want to provide to the council on either vegetation clearing or the spoil berm pilot project.
Sure, Carol. So let's see, Duck Harbor, I think probably everybody has seen and is aware of, knows about, completed about 80 acres of clearing this winter. There's about 40 acres to go, which will be done next winter. There's additional funding remaining in the grant to begin clearing trees and shrubs in other areas. So the area we expect to be inundated within the first year after the bridge is completed would be the priority for that clearing to begin next winter, along with completing Duck Harbor clearing. And then the winter after that, would start working on the Phragmites in the lower river. That's the foreseeable time frame we can lay out for vegetation management. Obviously, there's more to do after that, but both funding timeline and the kind of sequencing of that work is not specified currently at the moment. For the spoil burn project, so a contractor has been engaged by Ducks Unlimited, who is holding the money for this and managing the project. There's been several meetings to kind of scope out the project and discuss, you know, objectives and things we're trying to get out of it. The engineering firm has completed ground survey and also aerial survey of the project area and wetland delineation. We're expecting deliverables from those efforts any day now. We actually have a call planned tomorrow to update on that. So unfortunately, a day too early to have more details about that. But we expect in the next month or so to identify specific design alternatives for that project, and then to start putting that in formats for permitting, which will be undertaken through the remainder of the calendar year.
Excellent, thank you. Tim, is there anything that you're observing, particularly in Duck Harbor, you know, in terms of any transitions with vegetation that would be interesting to share? Any emerging vegetation that is being observed?
It's all anecdotal right now, but certainly the regrowth of salt water tolerant vegetation is fairly astounding throughout all of Duck Harbor. So it kind of, maybe it's not so astounding because it tracks pretty well the footprint of areas inundated by salt water, which we can see pretty clearly through the dead, where the vegetation had died off. And as extensively through that floodplain, as far east as the water flowed back from the beach, we're seeing salt marsh vegetation beginning to recolonize fairly quickly. So primarily these are kind of pioneering early successional plants that typically, you know, will come into a salt marsh soon after the disturbance. They usually don't last very long, a couple seasons before the salt marsh grasses take over. We are seeing Phragmites coming in as well. However, that's a little bit of a concern. This was the early part of the growing season was fairly dry, and there hadn't been too much saltwater flow until a couple weeks ago. And we expect additional overwashes in the coming weeks into early July and August, where more saltwater will come into the system. So how the Phragmites respond to that is something we'll be tracking and quantifying as the season moves forward.
Excellent, thank you. Helen?
Yeah, Tim, I was very excited to see that there were a lot of triangle orac plants, and also something called, what's it called? Something spike bush. Blunt spike rush.
The Stickleus spicata, yep.
Yeah, and guess what? You can eat the orac. It's grown, you know, you can grow it in your garden, but also all the kinds of orac, as far as I know. It's delicious. You can steam it like spinach. You can have it in salads. Anyway, there's a lot of it, and it's all salt. It's so exciting. I know you already said this, but the specific plants were very exciting to me. Thank you.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, Tim, and thank you, Helen. Sure. All right. So that,
Carol, there's a question in the chat.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Christine. I can't see my chat at the moment. Hold on just a minute. All right. The question is there a map showing where there will be clearing in winter 23-24? Tim, do you want to take that one? Or maybe you could
yeah,
just.
Yeah, I mean, we have MAP, I think it was presented at one of the last meetings. I don't have it at the tip of my fingers here to show right now, but I think we have presented that at the past meetings, at least in some
format. I think
we can make that available.
And basically, if you can just describe the area, Tim, that might be helpful right now.
Well, it coincides with the areas that would be flooded with the dike opening within the first year. So it's woody vegetation occurring in the lower basin. So pretty much any trees and shrubs in the lower basin below High Toss Road up to the elevation of high tide, which is approximately 4 to 5 feet. So basically woody vegetation, the edge of the floodplain below High Toss Road, then above High Toss Road, there's some low areas sort of in and around, oh, here we go. I think in here there's a map. If you want to click ahead a little bit, at least would help me describe it a little bit better. Okay, that's good. That's that one with the orange and the red and yellow. Oh, you had it. Slide six. Yeah, that. There we go.
Okay, can you see it? All right.
I see in between.
See it, Carol. Other.
Is that better?
Yeah, perfect. There we go.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So so that's it. So those are areas that after the first when the bridge is completed, after the first year, the tide gate setting will flood those locations. The vegetation would die. So before that happens, we intend to go in there and clear those areas. Sorry, I didn't have that teed up for today, but thank you, Carol, for jumping on that quickly.
And then in Duck Harbor, Tim, this is the area, right? So
pretty much everything, yeah.
So this area has been cleared, and this where
my cursor is.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything to the left, to the left of that is completed. And then that other half, about half of that half, so to speak, has been done.
Okay.
It's not quite orderly, and it's a little bit kind of spotty there that have been cut and not cut, but it's primarily on that eastern side of Duck Harbor.
Carol, so this is where it's going to happen. In the fall, this is where they're going back then.
Yeah.
On the park website, there's under, I can post the link in the chat. There's a map of the vegetation clearing. It doesn't explicitly show what remains, but it shows a darker green area, which composes most of the section that's left. So I can post that link in the chat, and if people want to, they can check that out.
That'd be great. Thank you. Okay.
Got it in there before you go.
Yeah, Brian beat me.
That's okay.
It's there twice now, Carol.
Excellent. Okay. All right. So just going back to our kind of slides here. Up here, teed up. So can you all see that? I just wanted to share a couple of photos. This was kind of a fun event. That took place in April 8th. It came together rather quickly. We were having a technical team meeting, and Nancy Civetta was with us and mentioned that she had heard some feedback from folks about the potential for oysters on the upstream side of the dike that could be affected during construction and could they be relocated. And many thanks also to Wes, who helped to coordinate this. And I think within just a couple of days, Nancy had lined up some AmeriCorps volunteers who showed up on the weekend, and I think it was about 20,000 oysters were quickly harvested, taken on the other side of the dike, and put back a little bit further downstream in a non-paved area, in a prohibited area. But it was just a good example of, you know, communication and coordination in responding to some preserve this significant resource. And great job by all the volunteers. And of course, Nancy and Wes who helped to organize this and make sure that it happened. Thank you to Lori Warner for these lovely photos.
All right. Yeah, Carol, I dropped it in the chat, but a lot of AmeriCorps members outweighed to assist with that as well.
Yeah.
It was a great effort. A lot of oysters were moved.
Absolutely. And although they're not, harvestable at this point, they do create, more for the natural environment. So, Kathleen?
Yes, Carol, can you tell whoever's not muted to mute themselves? There's too much background noise. It's very difficult to hear this meeting. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Yes.
It's Tim.
Okay, I think that's all set now, but right. Good call, Kathleen. Thank you. All right. So that concludes the project updates. And the next, I guess Helen has left the meeting. I think she's trying to get back in. I'm not sure why she's not able to get back in. Brian, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, I just want to share out one more thing. The two structures in the Herring River that were within the seashore, the former Fio and Rosenberg homes, the demo for those is complete and the site elevations have been reestablished. So that's one thing that's substantially complete for the project now. So that's pretty exciting as well.
Absolutely, that's fantastic. All right, I'm gonna shoot Helen the link again to see if perhaps she can rejoin. Bear with me here. Okay, she has the link. All right.
I'm back, thank you.
All right, okay, Helen, super. Phew, okay. All right, so thank you. And you did miss one important piece of update, which was Brian's report that the Fio and Rosenberg properties along Way 672 have been demolished and removed, which is an important step toward the restoration. So excellent, excellent news. And at this point, that concludes our project updates. And the next item on the agenda is any updates regarding the Herring River Stakeholder Group. And Bill Biwenga, the chair of the stakeholder group, is here. Welcome, Bill.
Hello. First of all, I wanted to say thanks to Brian and Jeff and the National Seashore for doing such a good job on the removal of those houses. It was a very nice professional job and I appreciated it. I don't have any updates as such for the from the stakeholders group, but I did want to make sure that we talked about financial reporting and the possibility of having a chair, an additional chair on the stakeholders group that would include someone who is responsible for the financial reporting. The way I kind of envision it is sort of like a CFO giving quarterly reports to stockholders. And since we're all shareholders in this effort, it seemed like a pretty good idea to have them available on the stakeholders group. So if we could, if the executive committee would consider that additional chair, that would be great.
Bill, this is Jeff. I have a question. Is this a new addition to the stakeholders group or just a change in the title of an existing position?
No, it would be an additional individual and presumably it would be somebody who is already responsible for reporting to the town and to the the funding bodies so that we're not reinventing the wheel here, but we have access to the information.
So, Bill, are you asking for somebody to be on the stakeholder group or report outs from a CFO kind of role?
Well, I think that having the chair, having the position on the stakeholders group sort of formalizes it. And anytime that we would have a meeting, presumably they would be there as well. But since we're having fewer meetings as a stakeholders group now, and we're kind of overlapping a lot with the meetings with the executive committee in order to, you know, make it the information available, but not burden everybody with additional time constraints. It just seemed like it was a more formal position and commitment. That's all.
Helen?
Yeah, I'm just checking. Carol, my memory is the select board appointed. Who appoints people to the stakeholders? The select board?
No, actually, the executive council. It's a group that was formed by the executive council.
Okay. So wait a minute. Mm-hmm. So typically, in the way in which committees are organized, you know, at least under state law and so forth, you pick from the members that are there. In other words, it's an internal committee choice to have who gets to be vice chair and who gets to be chair. In your charge, Bill, through you, Carol, I don't remember any language. So it is the executive council. It's just hard for me to keep straight which meeting it was done at. And if you need an extra member to do this, I don't know why you would. You have 750 members. You know, you have a lot of people there. So you just choose somebody internally.
Well, it has to be somebody who would have access to the information, the financial information. So that's why I thought, you know, there is somebody who is reporting to the town. If that person was a member of the stakeholders group, then they would presumably be available at the executive committee meetings and on those currently rare occasions when the stakeholders group has a meeting, they'd be available for the stakeholders group as well.
That could just be town staff that you requested their presence, but Debbie has ideas about this and she knows this stuff too.
I don't see how we could compel the independent accountants that are reviewing the project to be part of the stakeholder group. They're neutral and they're essentially reviewing for everyone and providing the information to the town and ensuring compliance. I don't think it's appropriate for them to line up with any particular party or any particular group. I think we want them to stay neutral and to do their job and to report as a neutral to all of us. I don't understand why the stakeholder group would need more than the reports that we're all going to be getting from them. Maybe I'm confused and not understanding.
Well, in that case, Debbie, maybe it's a matter of having the reports not only to the town, because presumably those reports would go to individuals in the select board or whatever the committee is, but have the reports also go to the stakeholders group so that it becomes a more widely distributed throughout the community and the various stakeholders.
Isn't this all available? I agree with Debbie. I think that whatever reports, you know, the select board gets or the executive committee gets, council gets. What more is there? Is there stuff that only the park knows? I don't think so.
I think following up on what Helen's saying is that, sure, whatever report they make to the select board or to us could be placed somewhere where it's accessible. I don't have any issue with that, but I don't see any more that we need to do than to provide the reports and make them accessible.
I agree with Debbie. And also that there is good horizontal communication. In other words, that information is readily available to anybody. Should it be on the Friends website? Should it be on the park website? I don't know, but you know, just to have it for everybody.
Well, then here's a question, Debbie. If the report is provided to the select board or to some other body that the town has, is that a live presentation or is it just text?
I don't know. I don't know what their contract is and what the presentations will be. That's something you need to consult with the town manager about. Maybe Carol knows.
Yeah, I can speak a list to this. I mean, a lot of this is just, you know, administrative operations of the town. So, you know, the town has many grants and, you know, has a history of administering many, many grants successfully. These just happen to be a lot of grants all at once for some major construction projects. So it's a little bit, you know, ramped up level of effort to track this. That's why there's this additional contractor support through Clifton Larson Allen. I would say just, you know, following along the conversation here that any reports, whether, I mean, these are fairly detailed reports too. And I'm not sure, Bill, what level of information you think would be interesting to the stakeholders group. I mean, I think that any reports that are made available to the select board could certainly be shared with the stakeholders group, you know, if they're part of the public package. And then if there are specific questions that, you know, come out of those reports, you know, we would be happy to facilitate getting answers to those questions that stakeholder group members might have.
Okay, I think that's the important part of the consideration is to make sure that there's a two-way communication.
Yeah.
So that it's not just being fed the numbers, but also if there are questions about those things, that they can be addressed.
May I ask the park representatives here on this group that we're all members of, the five of us. So what is the park? What are you guys supposed to be? What are you able to do in terms of sharing that kind of data? I know it might be a separate thing. Can you share what you spend money on in terms of this project or not?
I don't see any reason why not. It's not typically the kind of information we share out regularly on park operations. It's real nuts and bolts minutia. But we certainly could develop some sort of a report. Tim and Jeff are already tracking some of this in various ways already. And we work very closely with our budget analyst on it. So, yeah.
And we just got some nice numbers at the beginning of this meeting.
Right.
To see when they watch the recording. Okay, thank you.
Does that help, Bill?
Yeah, I think so. As long as it's a two-way communication. Yeah. And we have, you know, the ability to ask questions and make sure, because it's in everyone's best interest to have this as clear as possible, I think.
Oh yeah, transparency makes for good government. That's been the mantra on this entire effort all along, with the level of community engagement we've enjoyed. It wouldn't have been, honestly, wouldn't be where we're at without it. So sure.
Okay.
So if you keep me posted about when those reports are out and available, then I can also forward that information where they're to be found, and if there are any questions that come up, you know, Carol, I can put those back.
Can we incorporate that into executive committee meetings?
Sure.
An overall kind of snapshot slide, work it into the presentation.
Absolutely, absolutely, okay. Like a financial update.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
I see Gail has her hand raised. Is it about this effort, topic, Gail?
Yes, it is. It's a question to Bill. I'm wondering if the stakeholders have any, for lack of a better word, jurisdiction over how the grants are managed and the monies are spent. It seems to me that we don't. So I want to put that out there because I'm a little confused about the conversation. And I guess I'm sort of wondering if some stakeholders have raised this issue with Bill, and if some people are feeling that it's part of our charge to oversee and challenge the expenditure of money received or how it's accounted for.
The first part of your question, Gail, about do we have any jurisdiction over any of this? We're an advisory body, and that's all we are. But in order to be an advisory body, we have to have some knowledge. And so that's what I am trying to make sure that we have the information in order to be able to offer advice from a position of knowledge. It's not our job to oversee this, but it is kind of our responsibility to be aware of what's going on, I think.
I agree to a point, but I wonder if this is an area where we're charged to advise. That's what I'm questioning. I think that we are supposed to advise on issues that are concerned with implementing the project as it was approved and laid out in the filings. And I'm not sure that this falls within that area.
Thanks, Gail. I mean, I think interesting discussion, and you know, for sure we can incorporate kind of just an update on you know, the standing of the, you know, kind of financial of the you know, grants management of the project in the manner we did today, just to keep everyone posted. And then if there are specific questions, we can seek to address those. Does that sound acceptable to everyone?
Sounds good to me. Thank you, Carol.
Okay, good. All right. Thank you, Bill. Any other stakeholder group matters you want to talk about today?
No, I think that's probably sufficient for today. Thanks. I appreciate everybody's input and help.
Excellent. Thank you, Bill. All right. The next item on the agenda is any announcement that Executive Council members wish to make. Okay, hearing none. All right, I don't see any announcements from our Executive Council members. The next item in the agenda is public comment. If there's any public comment, any members of the public who would like to weigh in on any issues today. All right, I don't see any hands raised. All right, that pretty much then concludes the agenda for today. I do want to remind everyone that we have two remaining scheduled meetings in 2023, Thursday, September 14th at 3 p.m. and Thursday, December 14th at 3 p.m. And those would also be conducted virtually via Zoom. All right.
Very good.
All right. Well, I guess that concludes our meeting for today. Are the council members ready to adjourn?
Yes. Thank you, Carol.
All right. Thank you all very much. And we'll see you soon.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.